Welcome to the People Who Read People podcast. I'm your host, Zachary Olwood. Today I'll be sharing an interview from June 2020 that I did with Vashakan Pillai for his podcast, which is called The Untypical Podcast. It's a podcast where he interviews people with unusual experiences or beliefs. Vashakan interviewed me about my experiences with and thoughts on aphantasia. If you're not familiar with that term, aphantasia is a name given to the self-reported trait of not having mental imagery. Most people say that they can form fairly visual images in their minds. People with aphantasia say that they don't do that at all, or at most very slightly. In my case, for example, if you ask me to imagine a car, while there are things going on in my head that are spatial and conceptual, and while I could come up with certain details about a specific type of car, I would never call that process visual, whereas many people report that their mental imagery is quite rich and image-like. In the process of talking about this, Vashakan and I talk about other things, including psychedelic drugs, the nature of memory and human thought, and more. I thought Vashakan's questions were good, and I thought this was a good conversation on the topic, so I wanted to give it more exposure. And the topic has a psychology and behavior tie-in, so I thought it fit well with my own podcast. Okay, so here's the untypical podcast episode about so-called aphantasia.
So I understand you have this condition called aphantasia.
Yeah.
Can you just run me through what it exactly means?
Sure. My understanding, and I've read a good amount about it, is basically people that say they do not have an inner mental imaging, a visual processing when they imagine things. So in other words, a lot of people would claim that they can see things when they imagine things, see them pretty clearly in a way that they would describe as visual. And people with aphantasia would say that they can't relate to that at all. Like there's nothing visual about, you know, their thoughts or their, you know, their inner representations of things.
So when you say that you've had no visuals in your mind and your mind's eye is technically blind, how did you come to know that you had this condition? Because you can't know that you have something that you don't know doesn't exist, right?
Right. Yeah. And like a lot of people, I didn't realize that other people were different than me until maybe, you know, I'm 42 now. So maybe like 10 years ago when I first read about, not everyone is completely, you know, non-visual. And I still am skeptical. Like I find it hard to believe that anyone actually could have something that was visual, that they would describe as visual when they imagine things. I just sort of like people that, you know, if people can visualize things, they probably find it equally hard to believe that that people can't. But it just was so foreign to me. And, you know, so it was something that I didn't realize later. And like a lot of people, there's a lot of articles about people realizing like, oh, I had no idea that, you know, this basic thing was different for other people.
I mean, yeah, that makes sense to me because I don't have aphantasia. So when you first told me that you don't visualize things in your mind, that was kind of difficult for me to wrap my mind around. Mm-hmm. So does it work like if I tell you to imagine yourself on a beach with like the sun and the water's blue and there's like a palm tree on the right, you're not able to visualize that in your mind?
Not in a way I would describe as visual. Like I think there's the way I would describe it, which I've seen it described as, and people have said it was a good analogy, is like you can, you know, just like a computer, you can imagine a computer imagining things without a display plugged in. And so it's more of like a, you know, an internal wireframe. I mean, I can get like a foggy idea. Like I can kind of loosely say like, oh, if I was looking at a picture, there might be something in this area. There might be something in this area, like, you know, in my mind's eye or closing my eyes, but there's nothing resembling visual appearance. It's more like a vague sense of like, oh, there'd be something like this over here. There'd be something like this over here in this general spatial sense, but there's nothing like an image. Yeah.
But then how do you recall memories then? Because if you can't visualize memories, then how exactly do you, you know, just look back at times and stuff?
Well, I would say it's conceptual. It, to me, there's nothing visual about, you know, imagine a computer like calling up something. It doesn't, you know, it can call up many things, you know, including complex 3D representations of things without it ever being visual. So, you know, when I would say it's, there's no limit really to, I mean, because, you know, Avantasia people can be very creative. They can have very good memory. It's more about conceptual. Like if I'm remembering something that happened to me, it's more about concepts like this happened. I know that I can still remember like, oh, I remember like this was green, or this was, you know, it looked this way in some conceptual sense, but none of those things are at the form of a visual representation, if that makes sense.
Oh, you mentioned that, you know, this doesn't affect creativity as such. But how would someone with aphantasia, you know, draw or like paint something from memory without having the subject like in front of them?
Well, it's pretty simple because, I mean, I actually went to art school, and I would argue that, you know, there's no limit on that, because when I'm drawing, say I'm drawing something, you still have a concept of what something looks like. It doesn't mean that you have no memory or no concept of what things look like. You still have a spatial sense, you know. So if I'm drawing something from memory, which I'm pretty good at, by the way, I mean, I can draw things. I wouldn't call them, they're not like being summoned from a visual representation, but I have a sense of where things belong. And part of the human mind is, or mind in general, is you have a memory of how things looked, even if you can't describe those things concretely. So for example, like even though I can't summon a picture of my, you know, mother's face in a visual way, I could still look at a picture and say that picture is wrong, right? Because beneath the hood of your mind, you still have memories about what is correct and what's not, even if those things aren't conscious to you. So when I'm drawing something, for example, I would be like, oh, well, spatially, I know this thing's over here. I intellectually know this thing's over here. I should draw this over here. And I know when I look at what I draw, I know it looks right or not, right? Because I have that under the hood knowledge of how things should look, even if I'm conscious of it or not. I can reality check and say that's correct, that's not correct. And actually, you know, it actually gets back to why I'm kind of skeptical that most people can visualize as well as they claim to be able to visualize mentally, because I think if you, you know, if you took people who said that they were good visualizers, I would expect if you sat them down and told them to draw things from their visual memory, they wouldn't be that good at it compared to, you know, looking at an actual picture of it. And I think that's because people's claims of being able to visualize things just aren't as good as they think they are. I think some of it's an illusion, you know, but we can get into that later if you want.
I mean, sure, yeah. But how accurate would you say that your drawings are? Like, if I asked you to draw an elephant from memory, would it be a very... Would you be able to go into the details, or would it be more of like an outline?
I mean, I don't think there's any limits on people with aphantasia. My personal abilities, I'm probably better than average because I went to art school, and I, you know, like I said, it's less about the visual memory of the thing than it is about like, well, I know that an elephant has these traits, and I'll start drawing them, and when I get them out on paper, when I start looking at it, I will be able to fact check and be like, well, that doesn't adhere to, uh-huh, you know, my memory of how it should look, even if I can't visualize it. It's more like, well, now that I see it, I can adjust it. And also just, yeah, so being able to fact check is a big part of that. But yeah, I think, to your point about creativity, though, I definitely think people with aphantasia would be much less likely to get involved in visual art forms, because for me, it's just is not something I'm that interested in. I'm more interested in concepts and traits of things and more intellectual things. Like I even though I went to art school, it was mainly because of video and film. Like I doubt that there'd be many people with aphantasia who would want to get into like the, you know, drawing and painting. Those people are probably, you know, almost certainly going to tend to be people who rate themselves as high visualizers. Like I've talked to some artists who claim that they're visual representations were like 100%. So they claimed, they were like, oh, I think it's even maybe better than 100%, they claimed. And that to me is just kind of, you know, kind of mind blowing, like that they would claim that, because it's just so foreign to, you know, my internally blank world, you know?
Uh-huh. Oh, so you went to art school for video and film, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you correct me if I'm wrong. So, suppose you need to draw a storyboard or you need to visualize a scene that you're going to direct for a movie or like a or anything for that matter. What is your process like? Would you say that your process differs from directors or movie makers who do not suffer from aphantasia, or would you say it's about the same?
I would think functionally, I don't think there's that much difference when it comes to those kind of things, just because, you know, for the reasons I mentioned. Like, I just think there's not many limitations when it comes to actually just drawing stuff, and you can be a very good drawer. Like, I'm a pretty good storyboarder just because I understand the concepts of, you know, a film screen is, you know, this ratio, and I know intellectually what has to go in each quadrant to make to set up a good scene and things like that. I don't think there's any limits in that regard, because it's in a lot of those things are just a more intellectual knowledge where it's like, oh, I still understand the concept of concepts of space, the spatial representations, where they have to go in the quadrant of the scene, you know, things like that. So I would say, yeah, I don't think there's much different, though. You know, you could make the argument it's probably, you know, if you polled video film directors or directors specifically, you probably would find that they are more visual thinkers. Yeah, and probably less likely to have aphantasia, I would expect. I mean, it might be the reason I'm no longer, you know, I barely was in the video film industry. It turned out not to be something I was that interested in.
So what kind of movies would you direct or would you be interested in?
Oh, I never really got that, you know, far into it. I worked on some, you know, when I was young in college and out of college, I worked on some like local commercial, online commercial kind of stuff. And then I worked on some, you know, production assistant type of stuff in video in some films, but I haven't done much in that area. But I do think there's probably a good amount of visually creative people that have aphantasia. I haven't looked into that. That would be an interesting poll though, but I think it's more common than people think. I think when you get down to it functionally, I think there's, you know, both people with aphantasia and people not, and everybody on the spectrum finds it hard to imagine somebody reporting such a different way of being. But I think when you get down to it functionally, you know, we're all still spatial beings. We all intellectually, whether we visualize it or not, we all intellectually have to understand space and where things go in space, whether you have a visual representation of it or not.
Well, I mean, yeah, naturally. So, I mean, it works the same with people who have eyesight and then lose their sight through. It's not like they can't visualize things anymore, right? They still know where things are.
Right. And I think those people, like if you had, say you had sight and you were, you know, rated yourself as a high visualizer of mental images and then you lost your eyesight, I would imagine you'd still be able to, you know, still visualize mentally images, even if you couldn't visually actually see. Yeah, I would think. Yeah.
So would you say it works the same with aphantasia? Is it possible for you to develop it over time, or is it something you're always born with?
Well, I've actually worked on trying to visualize things more. Like I've sat, you know, including when I've done some psychedelic drugs, I've actually sat and tried to have more visual, you know, experiences, you know, including like in a meditative way, just, you know, without drugs too, obviously. But I've tried that and I haven't had any success. I mean, maybe in the slightest way, like, you know, very, very, very fleeting things. But I would say it's, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but it seems like it's something that's very, you know, it's either there or it's not. And it's hard to imagine it changing much for me.
Oh, you said you've experimented with psychedelic drugs, right? Mm-hmm. So like with psychedelic drugs, like LSD or mushrooms or anything, people usually see visuals, right? They see things. So mm-hmm. what exactly did you experience when you were, for lack of a better term, tripping?
Right. I would say it's, I definitely have had amazing, you know, experiences on drugs, including, ketamine, which was probably the most, you know, one of the most amazing experiences. But and I would say on LSD and mushrooms, the visual experience, I definitely had strong visual experiences, but they were when I was looking at things in my, you know, in the real world. Like, so I was looking at a scene and things would change. When it comes to actually like closing my eyes and visualizing. There wasn't anything visual there, but it was very conceptually, experientially, different and powerful. So, for example, on ketamine, you know, I would have these, I'd be laying there with my eyes closed and have these amazing experiential feelings and thoughts. And, you know, while there was some kind of slight visual aspect to it, it was almost like more like a imagining those things than it was seeing them. You know, it was like I was imagining a scene from long ago, but it was very conceptual, just like it is in, I'd imagine, in my own dreams and maybe in a lot of people's dreams, where afterwards you can talk about those things as if you experienced them. But in the moment, how much of it was visual? In my case, I don't think it was. It wasn't visual. It was more like the feeling, the concepts, you know, sort of like a computer dreaming or something. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing necessarily visual about it, but all of those things happened, you know.
So, I mean, I had this question when you first told me that you had aphantasia as well. Was that, we discussed this briefly, is that there's a difference between visualizing and imagining, right? Or right. Like when people say that, oh, I can see this in my mind, they're not technically seeing it, they're just imagining it.
Yeah, I think that is a good that is a good line to draw. And I think a lot of people, even with on the more aphantasia spectrum, because I do believe it's a spectrum, I think people could still use that, you know, that expression, you know, and a lot of people will report, you know, who have are on the more aphantasia side, they'll say like, oh, I always thought when people said I can see it in my mind, or I can see it in my mind's eye, that was a figure of expression and not something that they were actually experiencing. And that was what I always thought too. I always just assumed people were, you know, using a figure of speech of like, oh, I'm getting a sense of it in my mind. It's conceptual and not like I actually see it.
But then how would you say that your dreams work? Because dreams are like, you know, essentially imaginations, right? So how would you say that your dreams work? What exactly do you see when you dream?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very hard question to answer, because I would claim that in my opinion, I think many people's dreams are not what they seem, because I think there's plenty of writing and research on this to back some of this up too. I think what we report about our dreams often is reported as it being visual or something that we visually experience. But I think what actually happens in our dreams is something like it's triggering concepts, triggering thoughts, triggering words, triggering, you know, like cliched storylines. And we can report that as visual after, even if those things may not have had any visual characteristic during the dream. And, you know, for an example of this, just something that happened the other night, I had a dream that was, you know, very vivid as dreams can be. And, you know, it's kind of like memory. It's like the way it's stored in my brain, you know, the way it ends up in my brain is not necessarily how it was ingested, right? So it could have gone straight to thought and memory form without ever going through a visual intermediary, in other words. So even though I had this, you know, for this dream I had the other night, it was very visceral and affecting. But when I thought about it, I couldn't remember anything visual about it. It was like I just had this sense of me driving, you know, in this example, I was driving up a cliff face, almost like a vertical cliff face in a car. And I, you know, thinking about it, the concepts were all there. But visually, you know, was I inside the car? Was I outside the car? I don't have a sense of that. So for me anyway, and I think for a lot of people, these things are more conceptual. It's like we have an idea, like I'm driving up a cliff face in a car. And that can be a very affecting reality for us in the dream. But did we actually experience that thing visually or not? I don't know. I think for me, just because of how I experience day to day, and you know, I don't think that necessarily has a visual component even in my dreams.
So you mentioned that aphantasia is a spectrum, right? So
yeah.
So if it were on a spectrum, then there would be people who visualize are highly, like, you know, dependent on their visuals, versus people who have no visuals, and in the middle there would be a gray area, right? How would you describe that gray area?
Yeah, I would think. I mean, I think these things, for obvious reasons, are really hard to quantify and to get objective information about. But I think, you know, for one example, like on Twitter, I did a poll that said it got 150 or so responses, and you know, 15% of the people, when asked if they could visualize well, said no images, just abstract. That was 15%, which is much higher than, you know, typically when you read about aphantasia, they write it like, oh, only like 1 or 2 or 3% or something, whatever they say, is in that aphantasia spectrum or on that side. But I mean, I think the results of this poll I did, like, and I've seen other, you know, I've talked to many people who seem on that more in the intermediate spectrum area, you know, so in this poll, 15% of the people said no images, just abstract. That's pretty high. Then another 25% said sort of imagey, which was my intermediary result. So that was 25%. And then 50% said can see strong visuals. Then there was another 10% that didn't respond. That's why it doesn't add to 100. But so I think, you know, that gives you a sense of like trying to get a sense of these self-reports of how much of it is visual. I do think, like, probably like all human experience, a lot of human experience, it's in this spectrum of like it can be more towards one side, more towards another. And I think probably most people fall somewhere in the middle where if you had to actually, you know, I think you can have an illusion of something being kind of visual or a sense of being kind of visual and still it not being actually visual. Like if you ask that person to actually draw that scene, they would be like, they would start, you know, they would fill in the details as they went maybe. And then kind of maybe not even be sure if they saw those things in their visual or not, because they're just focusing on one part of the idea at a time. But I just think there's these intermediary areas, and it's to call it aphantasia or not is kind of a misleading thing to me. I haven't looked a lot into the recent research about it, but I would be pretty confident that would be the case if they researched it more.
So would you say that some people also, you know, that their mind's eye visualizes things, but not completely? Like the colors would be distorted or it would be fuzzy or something like that. Would that also qualify as aphantasia, or would that fall on the spectrum?
Yeah, considering I think it's a spectrum, I think I just to call something aphantasia or not, I think of it as more of a spectrum. And I think, I do think people's, you know, I think it's like a lot like life experience in a way, because, you know, our experience of the world seems complete and seems seamless. But when you get down to it, it's really not, because our minds are doing a lot of like smoothing over of things, you know. That's part of what the job our minds do is smoothing over experience and making it seem seamless, because otherwise the world would be a very jerky, you know, random seeming place. Like we're not aware of a lot of the things that go on beneath the surface in terms of processing and stuff. I just think lost my train of thought there at the beginning. What was your question again?
No, it's all right. We can just move on. What would you say is the scientific reason behind this condition? Because there has to be something, you know, I wouldn't say wrong, but different. So I'm not sure if you know this, but what would be the scientific reason behind this?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think it's not well understood, but I think it's, you know, because it is so hard to objectively quantify. But I think to me, it's just a difference in terms of like what is exposed to the conscious mind, because I think a lot of this stuff is actually the same when you get down to it. Like, I think it's just a dividing line between the conscious mind and between the unconscious mind. And this, you know, this explains why functionally there's not much difference between people. And that's why people can go, you know, basically their whole lives and never realize that they are so theoretically different than other people. I think it's more of a in terms of like, you know, people with aphantasia that we would call having aphantasia still have the ability to do these same things that we've talked about, right? They have the concepts, they have the spatial awareness in their brains, they have the ability to fact check if things are right or not based on their unconscious memory of how things should look. So it's just it just seems to be a matter of what's exposed to the conscious, you know, more visual side of the mind. So a person, you know, without aphantasia who is able to, who says they see things more, it may just be, you know, this dividing line in the mind where it's like, oh, the mind is exposing a little bit more of that information to their conscious mind, whereas like that stuff may be just more conceptual and beneath the surface for people on the more advantageous side, if that makes sense.
It does, but from what you've told me thus far, does this ever get frustrating for you, especially after you found out that you do have this condition? Does it get frustrating for you to think that, you know, to try and visualize but not be able to?
No, I mean, you know, just because it's so much about, you know, what you're used to, it's so hard for me to even comprehend what that would be like that I can't relate to, you know, feeling a sense of loss or something like that. To me, it just seems, I honestly can't imagine. It would seem to me to be so distracting and scary, actually, to be able to visualize things in a way that I would, you know, in a sense that was visual. I just can't imagine it. And I've often wondered if, you know, people that are, if they could research this, there's probably all sorts of angles you could take. But one thing that struck me was like, I wonder if people who can visualize things more are more prone to schizophrenia-like symptoms, for example, like the fact that they do have these very, you know, more visceral visual experiences. Does that make them more prone to maybe mental disturbances, whereas maybe people on the more advantageous side are more protected, which might play into ideas of, you know, they've done research showing that blind people are very unlikely to, people born blind are very unlikely to experience schizophrenia symptoms. And maybe there's some, you know, tie-in there to the more visual activations being tied to more like delusions and auditory visual hallucinations, things like that. So I think there's, but getting back to your questions, it's just really hard for me to even comprehend that experience. And so I don't feel like I'm missing out.
So you've had this, you've had aphantasia your entire life, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you just discovered that you had it at like 32, but you've had it your entire life.
Yeah.
So are there any distinct moments from your childhood where you feel like, oh yeah, that was aphantasia, but at the time I just didn't know it. I just assumed that like there was something wrong.
Yeah, I do have a funny story around that, because I think there's lots of these stories online. There's actually a book about aphantasia you can get by someone who, you know, it's kind of an informal book. It's more of just a collection of people's stories and talking to people with it. But one story I had, you know, which is oft repeated when people talk about this, is when I was younger. I remember one time I went to see Lord of the Rings movie with my parents. And my dad, you know, loved those books when he was a kid. And after the movie got out, he said something like, you know, that's amazing. You know, it really corresponded to the images I had in my head about that story. Like everything just really matched up. And I just, you know, I always think that stuff, you know, I always thought that stuff was like a figure of speech. It was like, you know, because I could theoretically say something similar in the sense of like, well, I read a book and when I watched the movie, it didn't like go against my concepts that I had about these characters. But, you know, in his sense, when he said it, he was actually talking about actual visualizations of characters and scenes. Whereas like that would never have occurred to me. I always thought when people read books, they were like me and just had these concepts. And, you know, that's why, you know, this is a common report too, for people with aphantasia, they can't relate to all these descriptive scenes in books, you know, that describe, you know, how things look, how a scene looks, how a person looks. I mean, I always just, I unless I really like the writer, I would just skip over that stuff because I just thought it was kind of like flowery, you know, or, you know, fancy stuff to seem kind of pretentious. Whereas like other people really get something from that. They can actually visualize the scene. And I can't relate to that. Like I can read it from an intellectual sense, to me, it's like, that doesn't do anything for me because it's just like, oh, there's a tree there. There's a you know, in a sense, it can set a scene in the sense of like, oh, there was a dark sky, which is like does set a mood even if you don't visualize it. But a lot of those visual aspects are just lost to me, like in terms of why are they telling me this? It doesn't do anything for me.
So when you read a book, you don't visualize anything in your mind. It's more of just concepts that occur.
Yeah, exactly. It's like
and that,
You can still have a very and you can still have a very, you know, I love books and I love fiction, less so now. I used to love fiction more, but I don't think anything's lost, because, you know, kind of like getting back to the visceral experience of having a hallucinatory experience on drugs. It can still be a very visceral, affecting experience, even if it's kind of like having a memory of something lived. You don't necessarily have to have all the visuals. It's like you just have a sense all those things occurred.
So, I mean, this is just a question off the top of my head. Suppose, for example, you read a book that's fictional, and the book gets converted into a movie someday, and you go and watch the movie. Would you say that the movie, the scenes that occur in the movie, would more or less line up with your concepts of what happened in the book, or is that completely different?
Yeah, I'd say it's more that I just don't have an expectation, and I would say the thing I don't like about watching movies about books that I really like is that it goes from being this amorphous conceptual thing in my head to being something very specific, and then those very specific things kind of take the place of the amorphous thing, which was better to me in my head as a theoretical story. That's what I don't actually like. A lot of times I don't actually like watching movies of books that I really like, because it kind of takes over the story in my mind, and not even in a visual way, just in a, you know, a story wise way. But but to your question, I don't really have like concepts other than like very loose. I don't have visuals of the characters, for example, other than a very loose way. It's not like I plug in a specific face or even like a specific visual body type or hair color or anything for characters, even characters that I, you know, really, really like a lot in fiction I've read. It's more like I just have the concept of like that person is this way, that, you know, the visual aspect, it never really needs to be activated for me to enjoy it, because I'm just like, oh, I know this character, I know about them, what they're like, and they're over here in my mind, you know, they're talking to someone. None of that stuff has to be visual for me.
It's interesting that you say that like none of it has to be visual for you, because, you know, when we're in school and stuff, and you're reading up material for an exam, for example, and, you know, you're just mugging it up at this point, and you're just trying to, you know, commit it to memory. And the next day, or at least this works for me, when I go to school the next day and I'm writing the exam, I can imagine like certain sections of my textbook and like literally copy it off my mind. Mm. So how would you say you wrote exams if, you know, you couldn't imagine like pages? Because for me, at least, I can't imagine someone writing an exam without doing that. So,
that's an interesting question, because I can't relate to that at all. I think it's, for me, it's more just about, you know, memorizing ideas. And I'd say rarely, I'm trying to remember studying something or looking at an actual book. I mean, I think there could be, I think there still can be concepts of like, oh, this stuff was on the same page, it was located near each other. But yeah, again, it's that spatial sense. To me, it isn't, that wouldn't be visual in any way. But I still think there can be things that jog your memory, for example. Like there can be things like, I know that stuff was located in the same place, and that can, you know, jog a memory of like, oh, a kind of a spatial related memory of like, oh, these things were nearby it. But yeah, I wouldn't describe it as visual. But that, it's an there's so many interesting ways to study this stuff, because you could, you know, you could ask people like who describe themselves as highly visual mental imaginers, like how they rated on tests in their life. And because I would imagine, yeah, like for people that, you know, because then you have the people that claim they have photographic memories too, which
right, yeah, that would be the complete opposite of aphantasia, right?
Right, and I'm also, you know, I'm a bit skeptical of that stuff too, just from like a bandwidth perspective. It's like, how would, you know, and I recognize that these people, it must exist, but I haven't delved into it much. It just seems like that must be they couldn't be always doing that, because that would just be such a high amount of bandwidth, right? So mm-hmm. It must be just when they really focus on it or something. I'm not really sure. I don't know much about that.
No, I actually happen to know someone who has photographic memory. Mm-hmm. So, like, for example, it was a crazy experience that, like, I went through once where, so I was walking into, like, my classroom, And he was walking right behind me. And I, of course, like, if I want to go and like participate in class, I need to do my reading like a day before and like keep reading it for it to like actually commit to my memory. Literally 5 minutes before we walked into class, he opened his phone, he opened up the reading, and he went through it in like 5 minutes, and he came in and it was just all committed to his memory. Like he could read it from his mind. And that was quite fascinating to me because, you know, that wouldn't that technically, it's unfair, right? Because when you think about it, it's just unfair when it comes down to it.
Yeah, it does seem, yeah.
Because, I mean, I would technically classify that as cheating also if it comes to, like, testing and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that there's people with aphantasia that could do the same thing. I think it is more just a sheer, you know, mental capacity thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if you found people that could perform that same function, but yet would describe themselves as, you know, having aphantasia and not having a visual image. Because I think it's, you know, in some sense, it's just about, you know, you could imagine doing the same thing with a purely like brain power conceptual model and not like I'm actually seeing this in my mind, right? But I don't know. I'm just speculating.
So for example, I'm sorry I'm telling you so many examples, but like if you had to do math in your head, how exactly would you do math in your head? Because for me, when I do math in my head, I literally visualize numbers adding up or like dividing. So how does math work in your mind?
That's a pretty hard question. I mean, I think I'm pretty good at math, and I mean, I don't know. It just feels like a computer doing the work. It's like, you know, the numbers, the things pop into your head, and it's almost like thought in general. It's like, how much control do we really have about this stuff? This just seems to be like a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. And for me, it's definitely not visual, but I still can do some pretty complex math in my head. And I think it just gets down to the nature of how much of thought is hard to describe. You know, I wouldn't know how to describe that, but I'll think about that in future.
Are there any like studies going on for the treatment of aphantasia? Is it something that like scientists are actively working on curing, or is this something that's just not curable?
I don't think it's curable in the sense that I think it's just a fundamental aspect of a lot of people, like more people than they estimate have it, I think, are on that spectrum. I should clarify too. I think there might be, you know, I sometimes feel like people are talking at different angles because, you know, like if you told me to visualize the number two, I have a sense of something like the number two in my head. It's not visual, but it's like, it's a sense of, you know, a sense of something, sort of like, you know, I would be able to recognize it if I saw it in real life, and I have a sense of it in my mind. So there is like, and I think that some people might categorize those kinds of things as visual. Again, I think all that stuff's on a spectrum, but I kind of wonder how many people, to me, that thing is clearly not visual in any sense. It's a very abstract thing that's just floating in my head, but I kind of wonder if some people would describe that as visual. But to me, it's not visual because it has no visual characteristics other than the sense like I could, you know, I have a sense of it enough to be able to recognize it in real life if I saw it. So I think that, you know, these things are all very hard to describe. So I kind of wonder if a lot of the stuff comes down to just people talking about it differently. But then again, I can't relate at all to people say they can. It's a visual experience. So there definitely is something going on there, you know, something extremely different going on there. But it's, I do feel like some of this stuff is just really hard to talk about, because I think, you know, when somebody like you might imagine like, well, yeah, this person has absolutely nothing going on, you know, like in any sort of like spatial way in their brain, whereas that's not the case. It's just so hard to talk about these things, I think, and I think that gets in the way too.
I mean, aphantasia is something I recently learned about. I mean, as far as I know, there's not much representation for it, you know, in pop culture or anything like that, that really gets the word out to the masses.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, would you agree with that, or am I missing out on something?
No, I think you're right. There's some researchers doing some work on it. Like I followed some people on Twitter who were some, you know, look like some legitimate researchers doing some work. And then I've talked to some other, you know, neuroscience researchers who say like, well, how would you ever get to the bottom of this? Because at the end of the day, you know, you're talking about self-reporting for people that largely do functionally the same things. So, you know, how would you ever differentiate these things? And at the end of the day, like, how can you, you know, what one person describes as visual might not be what another person describes as visual in their mind. And maybe a lot of it's just speaking about it in different terms or something, you know. So I think there's, you know, but at the end of the day, I do think there's something, you know, dramatically different going on for people just, you know, due to, I mean, like, there's no way we can get around the fact that, like, I can't relate it all to people that claim that experience is visual. And then you have people saying like, oh, it's just as good as visual for me. You know, like, there's something obviously going on there. But as to like how many, you know, I feel like there's a good amount of people that might fall towards the middle of the spectrum who might be like, oh, this is visual for me. Whereas this, you know, that same experience might be, other people might be like, oh, that's not really visual for me. I wouldn't describe that as visual. So I feel like, you know, a lot of it gets down to this problems of language and the ephemeral, you know, illusory nature of thought. It's just so hard to describe what our brains do because so much of it happens underneath the surface. And, you know, we can have the illusion of things being complete. Like when I look at the world, it seems complete to me, but it's only because I know that if I look somewhere else, I can see another aspect of it. What I'm actually absorbing might be the tiniest fraction of what's there, you know? And so it gives this sense of like, I have this complete worldview. And I think something similar happens in our brains where it's like, oh, I have a concept of it and it seems kind of visual to me. And I have the sense that if I focus on another part of it, that part is there too. But is that visual? You know, is it not? I think those things can be hard to define.
Yeah, I agree with you because you told me previously also that like when you actually examine what people are capable of and like drill down into what details they actually have, you don't think they're actually seeing images as much as they believe they are.
Yeah, I'm skeptical because I think I would bet if you gave me some people that said that their mental experiences qualify as visual, if you sat them down and told them to draw something and then told them later to draw the same thing with it actually in front of them, you know, draw it from memory versus draw it with them in front of them, I would bet a lot of money that their drawings from the actual thing would be much, much better. And so you would run into the problem of like them saying and making excuses for it, like, well, I'm just not that good a drawer, you know, I'm not that good at illustrating, and, you know, oh, it got a little fuzzy as I tried to imagine it. But I think a lot of these things come down to like maybe that is that experience that they're describing as visual is just not as it's more of an illusion than they think it is. And I think that it applies to a lot of our human experiences, our conscious experiences, where these things are not as complete as we think they are. We have the illusion that these things are complete. But when you drill down to it, if you actually did studies, I mean, like, why isn't everybody a great drawer? Because I would think if everybody had this amazing ability to visualize these things, why isn't everybody a great artist? Because I would think I know that's all I require, really. I mean, I have a very bad visual imagination, but if you put something in front of me, I can do a pretty good job with it, you know? And so why can't everybody do that if they claim that their experiences are actually visual, you know?
So when you're imagining people in your mind, do you just think of personality cues, or are you thinking of like faces and like physical images of their body?
It's more, yeah, I'd say it's conceptual. It's like, it's a sense of them. And it's kind of like, you know, even though I can't imagine my mom's face in a visual sense, for example, I still know intellectually that she has certain traits, and I can get a sense of like those traits if I focused on them one at a time. Like if I tried to, you know, imagine them, I can get a sense of them. And I can also know if somebody showed me a picture of, you know, my mom's face that had been altered, I could easily recognize it because unconsciously I have all that stuff stored. I can fact check against my unconscious memory of my mom's face. And so, you know, all of those things, I can't bring my mom's face up or anyone on my wife's face, but I can still recognize them very easily because all that stuff's stored under the surface. And I just have a concept of them, right? If I think of them, I think of all the things that I know about them, all the feelings I have about them. none of it becomes visual. Yeah.
But then would you say aphantasia would be considered to be a medical condition? Is it like a disability of sorts?
Or is it something? I would never classify it as that. I mean, just, you know, from a functional perspective, so many people can go their whole lives and not realize that they're different from other people. And, you know, I would also say, like me, there's probably a lot of people that are like, I wouldn't even, you know, want that. I don't see how it would help my life to be able to do that. And maybe it's even a little intimidating because it's something so outlandish from your normal experience. So yeah, I would definitely never categorize it as anything like that. Yeah, I think it's just gets into that realm of things of like our minds can work different ways to achieve the same outcome, and how much of it is, you know, how much of it is above the surface of consciousness and exposed to our mind versus how much of it is unconscious, that kind of thing.
So you mentioned that you went to art school, right? But then you didn't really you didn't pursue it further. But now you play poker, right?
Well, I don't play that much anymore. But yeah, for a while I was a professional poker player and I wrote some poker books.
So how would you classify, did aphantasia play any role in how you play poker? Because I mean, you probably can't count cards, but like, how exactly did aphantasia play a role in playing poker?
Yeah, I would say there probably is something there, because I do have I often would have a hard time remembering the suits of cards, you know, like my suits I had,
that's what I wanted to ask.
No, it's a good question. I mean, and whether that's due to aphantasia or maybe just a short-term memory problem on my part, because I can definitely imagine being, you know, being like me, having aphantasia and still having a great memory, a great short-term memory. But, you know, it could be a factor. I can remember the numbers and the ranks, you know, the queen, the king, because those are like more conceptual versus like the suits are more visual maybe and less conceptual. So they're harder to remember.
So would you say that you faced, you know, any difficulties in your adult life that others around you generally do not experience, like people who don't have aphantasia?
It's debatable. And I think there's a lot to talk about there, because I could think of like theoretical things people might call weaknesses, like in terms of like not being that interested in scenery or not being that interested in descriptive passages in books and things like that. But I think there's other, you know, then you could discuss the strengths too, because I think, you know, I think it leads to some being more conceptually oriented and being more interested in ideas and less interested in visuals. So maybe there's, you know, some strengths there, but you know, I think all that stuff's debatable. I think it's probably just comes down to just being a different way of being. Yeah.
So, I mean, if you had to summarize aphantasia as a condition, how would you do it?
Yeah, it's a tough one, because I think lots of people more educated than me on the subject would struggle with it. But you know, I would just say, it's a self-reporting that you do not experience, that your mental experiences don't have a visual nature, whereas a lot of people would report that their mental experiences do have a visual nature.
All right. Thank you so much, and have a good day.
Thanks, Vishakhan. I had a few more thoughts on this after talking to Vishakhan that I wanted to share. Regarding Vishakhan's question about doing mental math or imagining numbers, thinking about that later, I realized that when I imagine numbers or letters or simple characters like that, there is a very slight visual quality to them, but more strongly, there's a tactile quality. It's almost like my trying to imagine a number or letter seems related to a childhood process of writing out a symbol with my hand. So if you were to tell me to visualize the number 3, for example, I can actually feel some muscle memory in my hand being activated as I'm imagining writing it out mentally. And if I had my eyes closed, I'd say there's also a slight visual aspect as I imagine drawing it out, almost like an imaginary sparkler tracing the character in the air and then immediately disappearing. I wouldn't qualify it as visual, but maybe very slightly visual. But that's just imagining the act of drawing it out. If you ask me to try to keep that number in my mind to try to visualize it, I don't see anything, but I do have a vague sensation of that number being present. I obviously know what a 3 looks like, and if I close my eyes, I can occasionally get a ghostly visual of there being something 3-like there, but it would be a huge stretch for me to call that visual. Mainly, it just feels like one, I have a spatial understanding of what a three is, and two, I am very focused on that threeness. And it seems somewhat visual too, in the sense that if you got me to look at a picture that had a lot of noise in it, like a picture of a bunch of clouds or trees, I could probably find a three-shape structure in there because my mind is primed and looking for the visual characteristics of a three. But this whole process seems very far from visual to me. But as I was telling Vishak, and I can imagine some people interpreting this thing as being visual in some way. And especially for doing actual math, I'm pretty good at doing math in my head, but I wouldn't say there's anything visual to that. It's more just conceptual and using pre-existing chunks of knowledge that come automatically to my mind. Or else there's counting involved, which is to me more of an auditory process. So to sum up here, I think it's very hard to try to describe these mental processes, if not impossible, which is why at the end of all this, I still am skeptical about how different people really are in these regards. You can find many people who talk confidently about what their mental perceptions are like, but I think we should always be skeptical about these kind of self-reports because our minds are capable of many tricks and illusions. And you'll notice that's why I carefully define aphantasia as not being any sort of defined condition, but more that it's the self-reporting of not having mental visualization. All that being said, I do think something is going on there just because some people are so adamant that their mental imagery is so vivid and picture-like. I just think it's far from clear what's going on. Hopefully this was an interesting conversation. If you have some thoughts about how visual or non-visual your own mental processes are, feel free to email me via my contact page at readingpokertells.video or reach out on Twitter at apokerplayer. That's my handle. If you'd like to read more about aphantasia, I've assembled a few articles and resources. If you go to my blog at readingpokertells.video/blog and search the site for aphantasia, you'll find it. If you like this podcast, please give me a rating on iTunes, even if you don't listen to it on there. That's probably the biggest way you could show your appreciation. Either that or sharing it on social media. That's much appreciated too. Thanks for listening. Music by Small Skies.